All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer. And
And Hunter Leon.
we're back. I feel like I say this every time, but we're back after a little brief hiatus. I mean, it's like final season for both of us, so both pretty busy. But there's a lot to talk about due to our like little break. So let's just jump right into it, stop wasting time. And I know we talk about the Lakers a lot, but I feel like now is a good time to really talk about them
I think
because
now is the first appropriate time to talk about the Lakers in the entire season.
I think that the Lakers struggling out the gate was definitely a storyline we had to talk about. But now, fortunately for us as Laker fans, we're talking about the inverse of that. The Lakers are playing really well, 8-2 in their last 10 games,
It should be 9-1.
including a statement win against the Milwaukee Bucks. And this has really been powered by Anthony Davis, who's been playing incredibly during this stretch, capped off really by a 55-point, 17-rebound, and 3-block game on 30 or 73% shooting against the Wizards. So, Hunter, what have you seen from the Lakers during this stretch? What's really been the key to this run? And ultimately, is this sustainable?
Okay, so I'll start with this. Obviously, Anthony Davis has been the driving engine of this. No one can deny that. He's in the past 10 games in this stretch, he's been averaging, I believe, 35 points, 15 rebounds, and 2.5 blocks, which is just ridiculous numbers. Look, Anthony Davis deserves all the credit in the world here, but we also have to give credit to the guys who were getting the ball to Anthony Davis at the right moments. So a lot of credit goes out to LeBron and Russ here. A lot of credit should go to Dennis Schroeder. Like these facilitators that are allowing Anthony Davis to do his thing have been incredible. And I really want to highlight Russell Westbrook, honestly, more than anyone else. I think Russell Westbrook has done a great job of finding AD, especially in those non-LeBron minutes. And he had a 15 assist game. He had an 11 assist game with zero turnovers. I mean, he's just probably playing the best basketball I've seen Russell Westbrook play in like probably 2 years, maybe like. The best.
Easily the best we've ever seen him in a Laker uniform.
Oh, definitely in the Laker uniform, but I'm even saying past that, maybe even better. I mean, like, not statistically, like, he was having those 20-20-20 games on the Wizards, but just like the way he actually looks on the floor, this might be the best we've seen him in a long time, which I'm very happy to say, very happy for Russell Westbrook. And I have an interesting statistic here. 50 out of the 217 made field goals by Anthony Davis have been assisted on by Russell Westbrook, that which is almost 25% of his shots. That's a massive number, a massive number for a guy who's coming off the bench, especially. So
Yeah,
I do
because
want I those are the guys I do want to highlight. Oh, go ahead. What were you gonna
yeah, I
say?
was just gonna say, but when you see the Lakers play, like Russell Westbrook and Anthony Davis have great chemistry out on the floor. Like they really seem to have sort of figured it out to where like Russ knows how to get AD the ball and he finds him in all the right spots. We don't give Russell Westbrook enough credit as a passer because he is a very creative playmaker. He's obviously one of the top passers in the league at like when he's playing at his best. And so I think,
Oh,
when you have
wait. What do you know? As soon as Russell Westbrook starts playing good, you start praising him? We're not going to trade him anymore? What? Who
Okay, what yeah, okay.
has been supportive of Russell Westbrook through this entire thing? I have never once,
Yes, Hunter, but
I never
it's
once.
perfectly normal to overreact and exaggerate when things aren't going well. Me and you were both talking about trading LeBron just a couple weeks ago,
I
and
still want to
now
trade
we're for
LeBron.
a
I still
playoff
want to.
game.
No, I can't.
You know what I'm saying? So, okay, yes, obviously I'm gonna be harsh and scrutinize and criticize Russ when he's playing like garbage and he's actively contributing to every single loss, but I'll praise him when he's playing well. It's not like I have an agenda to push. I'm just calling it how I see it. But I want to talk about this with AD. What I've seen from him more than I've seen from him in the past 2 years, really since like 2020, it's just this physicality to his game. He's like catching more lobs than I see than normal. He's getting under the basket, dunking the ball, getting physical, getting energized. And that's the AD that we saw in New Orleans. That's the AD that won us the championship in 2020. And that's the AD we're seeing now. And that so it's no surprise to me that he's playing incredibly. And obviously he's really been the driving force behind this great run. And as to the question for whether this is sustainable or not, I think it just comes down to whether AD's body is going to hold up, especially since he's playing so physically.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to agree with you. I mean, just I'm really hoping Anthony Davis's body can hold up throughout the course of the season, which it, at the rate it's going, I think it can. But you know, I knock on wood there. And I absolutely do think this is sustainable as long as Anthony Davis is the driving force of the Lakers' offense and their defense.
I agree.
But
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you a question now because Anthony Davis has been playing so incredibly. There's, you know, ESPN analysts maybe overreacting a little bit, starting to call Anthony Davis a top five player in the league already.
He's top
So,
10 right now. He's playing like
yeah,
a top
I
10.
agree at top 10.
Yeah.
But I have a start bench cut for you. Right now, as it currently stands, who are you taking today at this moment? Giannis, Embiid, AD.
I think I have to go unequivocally Giannis number one. I think it's not really a question. Giannis, the best player on the best team, still I think the best two-way player in the league. Hasn't looked like he's ever missed a step. He's still very much in his prime, very much an MVP candidate. I picked him to win MVP this year, and honestly, it's possible. It certainly is possible. So I'm going Giannis number one. I have to go AD number two right now because even though him and Embiid are both playing at a very, very high level, I think AD is just incredibly hot. He's single-handedly winning, the Lakers games, where Embiid is just kind of doing his thing right now. He's playing very, very well, but he's not playing like he's not in a very, very red hot form right now, which AD is. And also I think AD has been just a bit better defensively as well. And so that would kind of be my ranking for that.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I also think that you have to consider the help that Joel Embiid has. I mean, we're not saying that Anthony Davis doesn't have help. I mean, it's LeBron and Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
But I think as facilitators, you know, James Harden, he has Tyrese Maxey. He's got just as much of people who can help him out as the Lakers do for Anthony Davis. Yet Anthony Davis in the past 2, 3 weeks has been producing at just a ridiculous level. Like we're talking like historic breaking records kind of level in these past few weeks.
Yeah, no, I certainly agree with that. I guess we can move on from there. I actually wanted to talk about the Philadelphia 76ers as just part of a general like Eastern Conference update since we haven't been on the pod for a couple weeks. So the Sixers, as they currently stand in the East, are the number 5 seed at a 12-11 record. They've looked pretty good as of late, especially defensively. I think that's really been their strong point as of late. They're second in defensive rating, first in points per game allowed, and first in 3-point percentage. So their defense has been looking very solid. Obviously, Joel Embiid is a big part of that. You guys got sorry, excuse me. Got guys like PJ Tucker out there. Matisse Thybulle is on the team. Although, he probably doesn't get as many minutes as he should.
He gets like 9 minutes a game, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a very underutilized on that team. But regardless, the Sixers, they are looking pretty good. So, what do you think about the Philadelphia 76ers as of right now?
Yeah, I mean, the East is a really tightly contested race as it stands, and they're sitting at the 5 seed, but they're only one game out from the 4 seed. I mean, it's a pretty big jump to the 3 seed, but I mean, I feel like this is where we expected the Sixers to lie within that. Definitely the playoff spots. And as we expected, I think James Harden has lived up to what people have thought of him doing this year. I mean, he's just looked really good, averaging 22 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds. Like, this is, I think he's doing more of the all-around things that we didn't see him do in the past. And I'm not saying that he's buying into like this idea of defense, but I think he's definitely putting in more effort than he has been in the previous years, like from what I'm seeing. Which is surprising considering, you know, he's 33 now. Doesn't maybe have the same legs he had as in his Houston Rocket days, but he's definitely been a big part of this team, especially on the offensive side of the ball, shooting very efficiently. Tyrese Maxey has also been incredible, been the young star, the rising star we've expected him to be. And like you said, PJ Tucker hitting those quarter threes, they just have a good, well-oiled machine right now. And I think at this rate, they could end up a top 3 seed.
All right, I want to raise something to you because personally, I see the Sixer squad and I just see like at most a second round exit. I don't think this team, as it's currently constructed, is gonna win a championship. Even with the very, very high level that we see Joel Embiid playing at. And even with a like very, very good James Harden, which we have seen at points throughout the season. I just don't think they have enough there. So, do you think, I mean, first of all, do you agree with me? And second, if you do, what pieces do you think you would want to move? Like, because in my opinion, I think Tobias Harris has kind of like always been on this team, and like, I don't know, he's always felt like the piece to move to sort of get an upgrade. And also, people forget that Tobias Harris is getting a max contract. He might be the least criticized player getting a max contract in like NBA history. Nobody ever talks about Tobias Harris in that same conversation as other max players.
I wouldn't say this team's maybe second round, but I don't think they're getting out of the Eastern Conference. I don't see this as a finals contender. I see this as like an Eastern Conference finals. Because I mean you have the star power, you have the role players, you have the pieces to get you there. But I just think other teams like the Celtics and the Bucks have that much more. I feel like
Even the Cavs, honestly, like the Cavs are
I
looking
don't
for
know so much the Cavs, because I think the consistent recipe for getting to the finals has been one to two, typically two all-stars slash superstars and really good role players surrounding. Philly
guess what the
has that.
Cavs have? The Cavs have a playoff superstar in Donovan Mitchell, another all-star in Darius Garland,
Yeah, but
who's
also
very, very
experience is a
good.
part of that.
We've seen young teams make it to the finals.
Yeah, it's been a long time, probably since the OKC team in what, 2011?
2000, I think 2012. 2011
Maybe,
was the
yeah,
team.
2012, 2012. That's right.
But I mean, regardless, like I think that this Cavs team, I mean, they got some playoff experience under their belt. Donovan Mitchell, obviously very, very experienced in the playoffs. I think, okay, I'm just making the argument that I think the Cavs right now have a higher chance of making it to the finals than the Sixers. And I think that the Sixers need to really, really consider if they're gonna start like making some moves. Because
I would say
I
that the Sixers, I think, as of right now, sit having a better chance of making it to the finals, but I think that the Cavs' ceiling is definitely a lot higher. I think there's a difference.
okay. I mean, okay,
And
just what do you think of like my idea about moving Tobias Harris off this team? What do
oh,
you think of that?
absolutely, Tobias Harris is the piece to move, and he has been for years. The problem is no one's going to take that contract, especially because he still have another, like, I don't know, 3 years left on the deal or so. Like, that's just a horrible contract. Not even like teams like the Spurs, the Rockets, the Thunder, not even young teams want to observe the contract like that, because for one, you're not getting a guy who is necessarily going to be a super good big help to your young guys, because I don't think Tobias Harris is a super vocal player. I mean, I'm not in the locker rooms, but he just doesn't seem like he has that sort of leadership quality. And then you're also having to pay him a max contract, which means if you're a young team, you're gonna have to trade away a good amount of pieces simply to match the contract. So I don't see any team in the league wanting this, especially because any team that's contending, you can't contend if you have a max spot being filled up by Tobias Harris. That's just not
Yeah.
realistic. So
As
I think
it
they're kind of
stands
just
right now,
stuck. They're stuck.
they are just kind of stuck with Tobias Harris, unfortunately. As it stands right now, would you say Tobias Harris is like one of the worst contracts in the NBA for production that you're paying? Like,
I mean, he's got to be up there. I think a lot of people don't think about it just because Philly's a winning team and he doesn't make mistakes. It's not like I'm calling Tobias Harris a bad player, but he's
not
probably
a bad
more like a
thing.
25 to, let's say probably 25 sounds about right for Tobias Harris. And
Yeah, that makes sense.
that might even be like a slight overpay. When you consider guys around the league, like for example, I would consider him to be like the same level as Spencer Dinwiddie, and Spencer Dinwiddie's making $20 million a year.
All right, that's okay. I think that's a little disrespectful
No, I
to
think Spencer Dinwiddie's been great.
Spencer Dewey has not been that good this year. We'll
This year,
talk
he's
about
been
them.
pretty
We'll
solid.
talk about the Mavs in a little bit, but let's move on from talking about the Sixers. And let's move over to a fellow Eastern Conference team, talk about the Miami Heat, who are now at the ninth seed after starting the season very, very, very rough. They obviously missed Jimmy Butler for a long period of time. Now with Jimmy back, they started to win some games, including a very good win against Boston on the road. I don't know if you caught this game, but it was pretty crazy. Jaylen Brown hit that insane rainbow three to send it to overtime. And yet, like, Jimmy Butler still sealed that game pretty much single-handedly in overtime. So what do you see from the Heat? Like, what do you think have been the key pieces in sort of like allowing the Heat to be a good team again? And yeah, what do you think is going on in Miami?
It has absolutely been Bam Adebayo. Bam has taken his level of night-to-night gameplay to the level that we wanted him to when he was in the playoffs. Like, we saw those games against the Celtics, against some other teams as well, where Bam really took command of the game. Because, I mean, Jimmy Butler is a great player, but we know he really turns it up in the playoffs. And not only that, but he's not a scorer. He's not an efficient scorer. He really does everything else. And Bam has been able to step into that scoring a little more, especially with, their offense not really revolving around Duncan Robinson as much anymore and Tyler Hero. Bam has stepped into the role and he's been great. I mean, he's just only going to improve. He's still young. He's 25 years old. I mean, I really just think he's been the difference maker. I can't really attribute more to the conversation because I don't think I've seen enough Heat games, but I do know that Bam has been the talk of the league.
I also want to talk about Kyle Lowry really quick because Kyle Lowry, there's been talks about the Heat being willing to part ways with him. I think he's been okay, but I mean, Kyle Lowry, I think his biggest positive attribute thus far is just his availability because I'm pretty sure he's played every single game thus far for the Heat. Doesn't mean he's been playing particularly well. Like he's still shooting pretty inefficiently. He's still turning the ball over. Like I just don't think we have the same Kyle Lowry anymore that is going to be that impactful player that we knew he was in Toronto. So I don't recall off the top of my head the contract situation in Miami, but if he's an expiring contract, I could see them moving him out at the deadline or something like that.
I believe he is. I think he was on a 2-year deal.
Okay. Yeah,
But
so I think
another guy I
that's
do want to talk about
sure.
is Victor Oladipo.
Huh.
He, I think, was the guy I expected to be the one to make this step up. And I think Bam could have been that guy in my mind originally, but I always thought, well, Bam does this every single year, so it's not going to be Bam. But Victor Oladipo, I wouldn't say he's taken a step down, but he's just been underwhelming relative to where I thought he was going to be. Especially because he's been so inefficient from the field. I mean, in his past 5 games, 1 for 7 from the field, 2 for 6, 4 for 12, 3 for 11, and 1 for 7. Like, he's just not hitting his shots. And
Are you looking at
look,
the right thing? Because I'm pretty sure Victor Oladipo has been injured the whole season.
no, I swear to God, I'm looking at this.
Don't think you are. Pretty because I don't think he played since he got injured in the playoffs last year. Yeah.
Are you for real?
Yeah.
I swear I saw Victor Oladipo on the court. My,
Yeah, no,
yeah. Oh, okay. Well, Victor Oladipo, you're doing great, buddy.
yeah, you're like, man, he's been really disappointing. He's been missing all these shots and stuff. You might have been
I
thinking
swear to
about it.
God, I swear I thought Victor Oladipo was playing, but that's okay. I can be wrong. It happens. I can't watch all 32 teams all the time.
Mean 30.
30, 30 teams.
Yo, Hunter, you're messing up
My
everything right now. It doesn't know
brain is
the
you want to call it early? You want to
I will move. We'll move on.
But
I think we can get this
I
handled
think
on.
we could talk about the Bulls now. I think they have been pretty disappointing recently. I mean, it's been pretty sad. We talked about them earlier with the Lonzo Ball stuff. But they just really can't seem to pick anything up. I believe they're 30th in 3-pointers taken, 30th in 3-pointers made. Their true shooting percentage is like bottom third of the league. They're just very poor on offense for a team run by Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Nikola Vucevic. Like, you'd expect their woes to be on the defensive end, but they've really just been struggling all around. And now we're looking at them and they're 3-8 in their last 11 games. And I think they're sitting at the 10 seed right now.
I mean, don't get it twisted. Like you make the
12
10.
seed.
Yeah, they are the 12th seed right now. I just want
Yeah.
to say, the Bulls are also have not been the greatest defensive team either. But that's, I mean,
No,
yeah,
that's what I'm saying. It's like you'd figure they'd be good on offense, but they're not good on defense either. So it's just kind of been very disappointing. What do you think their biggest issues are, and how do you think they can fix it? Is it possible to fix it?
I mean, I just think it's been really Zach LaVine and Nikola Vucevic. We'll talk about it in a second, but been incredibly underwhelming this year. Zach LaVine not been playing like an all-star whatsoever. Just very underwhelming on the scoring. And Nikola Vucevic just really, I don't know, what I've his whole stint in Chicago thus far has been pretty underwhelming, especially because the player that we saw in Orlando, like we had assumed it would translate and carry over, and he would be the like nice big third member of that big three between DeMar, Zach, and Nikola Vucevic, but it just hasn't been that way. As of, like this year, it's pretty much just been a big one with DeMar DeRozan putting this team on his back pretty much. I don't know if you can fix this. There are a lot of good pieces on this team. Like I think Caruso's still been very good. Lonzo is still on the team even though he hasn't played, and so maybe that could change things. But I think it's really just going to come down to the players, making the necessary step up in their game in order to play to a higher level. I just think it's that simple.
Yeah, I think a big part of this team also rests on Patrick Williams in the sense that I think he needed to step up. And I mean, he's 21. I'm not saying, hey man, you can't play well out there, you're doing like crap, but it's unfortunate that they need to rely on somebody so young to take a big step forward for them to be successful. I think we've talked about Lonzo being out being a huge part of their issues. I do think if Lonzo were back, they'd be around the 500 mark, to be honest. I think he's that big of an impact maker on the just like the overall winning record of a team. But look, he's not here, and this is a team with some guys that are injury prone, and you got to take that into account. I really don't know that there's a way to fix this. If anything, you might have to just blow it up. I really this is clearly a team that's not going to win a championship. DeMar DeRozan still has a good amount of value. I don't know that you're going to be able to trade a guy like Alonso because of his injury status, but you got some pieces here you can definitely trade, and you can build around a young Patrick Williams. You can build around Ayo Dosunmu. You can still have Lonzo Ball there and have a pretty fun team still.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's kind of become almost a running joke in this podcast where it's like anytime a team is like going through some minor woes, it's like, all right, it's time to blow
No,
it
I'm
up.
not telling them it's time to blow it up. I think that this team is a team that it was intended to build like to win the championship. I'm saying if Lonzo Ball can come back, I would not, even consider it because I do think Lonzo makes that big of a difference for them. But we don't know when he's coming back, and I think they have a lot of nice young guys to build around.
I mean, the thing is, Chicago has not been good for a while. Like before this stretch, with DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine pairing up, the best Chicago had been was back in like 2017 with the like Dwayne Wade team. It was just a very bizarre time for Chicago basketball. But they really haven't had like a good team in a while. And so I think even if they were just a mediocre team, like maybe that's worth it for the fans. I actually just had a quick question. If you knew, or if you just had to guess, what do you think is the worst off, excuse me, what do you think is the worst offensively rated team in the league?
The Clippers.
No. It's I feel like it's this one is not obvious, but it's like, oh, that makes sense. Think about it. It's an Eastern Conference team.
Eastern Conference team.
Let's just say they're missing a
The
lot of offense.
Knicks.
No, they're missing a lot of offense for various reasons.
The Nets.
No,
It's,
not.
I was gonna say, like, I hope it's not the Nets
No
because
way.
there's.
And any team with Kevin Durant is never going to be the worst offensive rated team in the
That's
league.
true. You said they're missing a lot of offense.
Yes.
Oh, the Hornets.
It is the Hornets.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the thing is, LaMelo finally came back and then he got injured again.
I know, very unfortunate,
I stepped on the fan's foot. Tragic.
but anyway, let's move on from talking about the East. Let's go out west briefly. Let's start at the top. Suns are the 1 seed right now. Pelicans are the 2 seed. Is this what you expect to see like toward the end of the season, or like what do you think of these
Look,
two teams at the top?
we've already talked about our feelings about the Suns from the beginning of the season. We both thought they were going to drop down a little bit with their whole Jay Crowder thing, the not taking anything away from the Mavs series, like all that happened. But I mean, at the end of the day, they've been playing pretty well. This is a Chris Paul led team, and
Okay, I don't think that's fair anymore to say. I think this is a Devin Booker-led
Okay,
team.
it's no, but in the sense from like a wins perspective,
What does that mean?
like Chris Paul is a winning player. I'm saying Chris Paul led
Yeah,
team,
but
like
Chris
Chris
Paul,
Paul.
like, they win without Chris Paul. Chris Paul's
Yeah,
been in and out of the lineup because of
that's
injury.
true. I'm
And
saying Chris
Devin Booker.
Paul wins. I'm saying historically in his career, he's won games. I'm not saying this is a Chris Paul led team in that perspective. This is definitely Devin Booker's team.
Okay, I just want to, because I feel like Devin Booker, we don't give him enough credit. And I think this is especially prevalent in like 2021 when everyone was like, wow, all the things Chris Paul has taught Devin Booker. It's like, guys, we got to give some credit to the man himself. Like, he's just a phenomenal player. He knows how to win games now. Like, let's give credit to Devin Booker where it's due. And I think we're seeing it again this season. Like, he's just elevated his game even more. So I think right now, it's pretty clear that he's the best shooting guard in the league. I don't even think it's a competition. I'm trying to think of other players who might give him a run for his money, and I can't.
Yeah, I would agree. I think he's the consensus best shooting guard in the league. But I think this is fair to say. Once we got past that point where we're like, okay, the Suns team isn't playing horrible, like they're actually a good team. This is where you expect them to be that 1 to 2 seed range. That they're at least, at the very least, a regular season great team. We'll see what they can do in the postseason in the future. But I think the more interesting team to talk about here is this Pelicans team. I
Yeah.
mean, we d talked about them. You expected them to be a top seed. I really did hope they were going to be a top seed, but I wasn't like 100% sold on it. I love this team. It's such a fun team with CJ, Zion, BI, Jonas Valanciunas, Jose Alvarado, and they've all just been playing so great. I mean, we have right now Zion Williamson playing some of the best basketball of his career, averaging 24, 7, and 4. And he's playing great defense too. Like, I think he needs to be given more credit on the defensive end of the ball. And then Brandon Ingram has just been balling as well. I'm gonna pull up his stats right now.
In
And
the
he's
past
been.
few games, in like the past, I think 11 games, they've had the number one defense and I think the number five offense. So everything's been going great on both ends of the floor. But I want to credit their defense especially because you have guys on the floor who just make all the best like winning defensive plays. Obviously, you mentioned Jose Alvarado, but I want to give credit to a guy like Herb Jones, who, is a great defensive player, especially for a guy who's so young. And a guy, another guy who's just solid all around. Like the perfect 3-and-D kind of guy, Trey Murphy the third, he could just sort of fill in all the gaps that you might need in your team. He can hit threes, he can play some defense, he can just fit into a system, and they're the perfect guys to sort of complement around, your star player in Zion and BI, and then also you CJ McCollum as that third option. I love the way this team's constructed. I love the way they're coached, and I think they're going to be at the top of the Western Conference, like, throughout the season. I don't think this is really a fluke right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's really interesting to have your number one and two option interchangeably. I'd say Zion and BR would, but you have very different styles of play. Brandon Ingram, very Kevin Durant-esque, very lanky, shoot over the top kind of guy, and that's very hard to guard. And then you have like just absolute bully ball in Zion, and Zion's actually been averaging 50% from three on like one attempt per game, but still 50% from three. I mean, like if Right, if he's only taking one or two threes a game, but he's hitting, that one in the that he takes in the game, hey, that's a win for you if you're the Pelicans, right? Because that means teams at least have to respect it and guard it. Because if they don't, you know he's going downhill.
We do though. And I, but I think, like Zion, he's never going to be like a 3-point threat, at least
Oh
not this.
no, definitely not. But
But
what I'm
you don't
saying
need
is,
him to be. You don't need him.
if he's taking them and he's hitting some of them, you have to respect it. Which add, definitely adds to the team as a whole. And then
Definitely.
in the third option, you have CJ McCollum, which let's say Brandon Ingram's not hitting his shots, right? CJ will be hitting his shots. And if they're all firing, then it's over. And Trey Murphy, when he gets hot from three, he can light it up. Like
He
he,
gets
that.
he's like a flamethrower, seriously. Like, I don't even think that's an exaggeration. Like, he gets hot. But let's keep going because there's a lot to talk about in this episode. So we got the Mavs in the West at the 10th seed right now. The Nuggets and Memphis are at 3 and 4. So just some quick thoughts about these three teams and where they're currently at right now.
Yeah, I think the Mavs, man, this one's tough because I was very big on the Mavs. I'm still very big on the Mavs. I don't think that they'll stay at the 10 seed, but they have been struggling. I mean, this team is just being absolutely dragged by Luka. Like, there's very little help. The only consistent help I can say he's been getting is Christian Wood. He's been putting up 17-7 coming off the bench, and I do like the role that he's had on this team. But overall, I feel like everyone else has kind of been disappointing. It's interesting they added Kemba Walker recently, so there's that.
I
But I
mean,
mean,
that's
it's.
just like that just screams desperation. Like, why are you signing, Kemba Walker, whose knees are made of jello at this point? Like, that you need more help for Luka, and clearly the way this team is assembled, he's just not getting it,
One thing I don't understand is they have not been playing Travail. They've been playing him 5 minutes a game here, maybe 6 minutes, 10 minutes at most. Travail, I feel like, especially with Luka, would be such a great big to start, even. I mean, like, right now, well, who are they starting? Dwight Powell at center? I think if you have twin towers and Dwight Powell and Travail, Dwight Powell can stretch the floor a little bit. I think that'd be pretty interesting, especially because Dwight Powell has been fairly underwhelming as well. And that gives you more size on the floor. I think they need to explore that option a little more, because if you have four shooters, including Luka and Travail out there, I think that provides a different dynamic. And this team has been bullied a lot of the time. Because if you remember in the postseason last year, Mavs' whole thing was, we're just going to keep shooting, and we're just going to keep shooting, and we're going to take 63s in the game. We don't care, but we're going to hit 45% of them, and you are going to lose. And when they're not hitting those threes, they have nothing else to go by.
I mean, that's pretty much been their game plan this year as well. I mean, that's why they haven't really played JaVale as much. They like having those stretch bigs and Christian Wood and Maxi Kleber, So
But my
just
point is, if they're
that
not
Luka
hitting
guy
threes, they
part.
need a different look.
I would agree with that. I think that, changes, I don't even know if necessarily changes need to be made, but definitely adjustments need to be made within their system or something, like to vary the offense a little bit, because their defense, if I'm being honest, it's looked pretty good. Like, they're number eight ranked defensively. It's just their offense at times is just like so reliant on Luka to create the offense that, the whole offense gets stagnant and predictable. And so I think that the Mavs do need like a secondary playmaker, and maybe that'll be Kemba Walker, but I really don't think so. So I think if you're the Mavs, you look for another guy who can handle the ball and create some offense, and you give Luka some time off ball, or don't have to play him the whole game pretty much, because you have another guy who can create offense.
I would hope that they can find that guy, which I think it was supposed to be Spencer Dinwiddie.
That didn't work so well.
I mean, I think he's just taken on a different role for this team than initially expected.
I mean, he's pretty much like a spot up shooter on this team. Like, I think that part of this, I think, has to be laid at the feet maybe of Luka. Like, at what point do we say, like, maybe he has to trust his teammates more and let them, try to create the offense, let them play with the ball more, because he has, I think, the highest usage rate in the league. So every possession, Luka's getting the ball for most of it, and the offense goes lives and dies by Luka pretty much. So at what point did the Mavs got to be like, okay, we got to try to vary and diversify our offense a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a trust thing for Luka. Maybe Luka has to let his role players get into a little more of a groove. We know that all-stars, they and superstars, they can do their thing, but it's the role players are the guys who you need to give a little bit of help to be able to get them in that rhythm. And I think Luka, that's the only knock I can give to Luka for, I mean, aside from defense, is the fact that he is very in his own game. And that's not a bad thing per se, because he is going to get you a bucket every time. He's going to get you an assist, but maybe he needs to give the ball to Spencer Dinwiddie, let him take it up the court a few times a game just to get his other teammates in the rhythm.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that.
And that's not to say that Luka isn't an MVP candidate. But you need to be able to criticize even the best players to make your team better. And I think this team needs to just take a look overall at the organization, because I feel like they have pieces to be a playoff team. They have the pieces. I'm not going to say they have the pieces to get to the finals, but this team could get to the conference finals. I think, again, they can do that kind of thing. They're definitely there. So they have to look at themselves and say, hey, we're a 500 team right now. What can we do?
Definitely. And I think,
I don't think this is a team that needs changes.
I don't think so as well. Maybe adjustments, though, in the
Yeah.
way that they run their offense, especially.
Yeah, and I want to talk about two other teams in the West who they were really hot to start the season. I mean, just red hot, and they're coming back down to earth a little bit in the Spurs and the Jazz. So these are teams that have started the quote unquote tank, especially the Spurs, because they're on an 11-game losing streak. Jakob Poeltl's been missing for them quite some time, but they're not just on an 11-game losing streak, but they're 1 of 16 in their last 17 games. And the Jazz are 4 and 6 in their last 10. So they're kind of just trading even. But to start the season, they were like winning every single game. So this is a
Yeah,
big
they were the
change for
one seed
them.
at one point.
Yeah, they were the 1 seed. And now I
Nine
think they're down to like the 8 seed, maybe like somewhere in that
seed,
range, 9 seed. Yeah. So do you just like this was what we expected overall, but do you think that either of these teams are going to try and sell off some guys that are playing well just to tank even more?
Definitely, I could maybe see that for like the Jazz, but I think the Spurs, they got a lot of young pieces that they want to keep and keep building around. They found a gem in Keldon Johnson. Jakob Poeltl's been very, very good for them. So maybe Jakob Poeltl actually might be a guy that they ship out because he has a lot of value, and they could definitely get a couple a pick, maybe a young asset for him. And he's not really going to be the centerpiece of their team, especially if they're trying to go for Victor Wembanyama. Like there's going to be some competition at that center position. But yeah, I mean, just more generally, I think that this is pretty much what we expected to start the season with these teams. Like, no, we did not expect them to be so high up in the West, and I'm glad that neither of us really like bought into the hype, as it were, and we're like, the Jazz are making the finals. Like, I think we rightly like were cautious of like these hot early season starts, and now I think they're just regressing to the mean. I think teams are starting to figure them out a little bit. Like the run and gun kind of style only works so much; otherwise, every top team would be running it. And I think players like Keldon Johnson, who are the number one option, they're starting to get, scouted a little more. Their game is starting to get figured out a little more. So it's just, the same tactics aren't really as effective. So I think
Yeah.
that, yeah, like especially the Jazz, though, they do have a lot of players that I could see being shipped out. Like Mike Conley, perfect for a contending team that wants.
Jordan Clarkson would
Hold
be
on.
great.
Mike Conley to the Mavericks. What about that? That would be a great deal, wouldn't it?
Would be I'm trying to think because it really just depends on how much Luka is willing to share the ball, like share priorities. Like, does Luka want to play off ball?
Well, I think it's less of a matter of like what he wants and more what's best for the team. Clearly, the offense gets stagnant at times with Luka being the only one who can do anything to create offense. So I think, okay, well, without diving too deep into that, I think there
I
are
think
other options.
that's interesting. There are options around the league is the point.
Yeah.
For these guys, Jordan Clarkson. I'm trying to think of who else on this team. Maybe Mike or not Mike Beasley, Malik Beasley, I believe is on this team.
Yeah, could.
Another guy who could be shipped out. So there's definitely some moves to be made there. But I want to ask you another question. This some stuff from Twitter.
Yeah.
Which NBA player do you think has been the most disappointing so far? And just like, I'll give you some names to give you an idea, and you can give somebody that's not on this list, but we got D'Angelo Russell, Karl-Anthony Towns, RJ Barrett, Kawhi Leonard, James Wiseman, Zach LaVine, Vucevic, Scottie Barnes.
Yeah, so I'll just quickly like go through some of my thoughts on each of these players. I think D'Angelo Russell has been disappointing for like the past 5 years. Like I think we have to just realize that this is the kind of player that he is. That one season he had in Brooklyn, where he was an all-star and he really led that team to the playoffs, was more of an outlier than anything and not really indicative of the type of player that he is. So not too disappointing there. Cat, yeah, he's been disappointing. He's a big reason of why the Timberwolves have been struggling. Obviously, he went down with that injury, so hoping he gets back to full health soon so we can see him back on the court. But yes, he has been very disappointing. Not the player we want to see, and like not the all-star best center in the league conversation that we want to see. RJ Barrett, I think, might be my pick for this because he was a guy who like the last few months of last season looked phenomenal. Like he was playing like a very, very complete player. He had a great, like, he was shooting the ball at a very high efficiency, great on defense, really just looked like smooth and really adapted to the NBA game. But now his game has just kind of fallen apart. Like, he can't hit a three to save his life. He just makes a lot of awkward plays, like not great at finishing, and just kind of looks lost on the court out there sometimes. Yes, he's still good defensively, but just very
I don't even know if
disappointing.
I can call him good defensively. I think he's just lost in general on an NBA court. Like, I he's also my pick for the guy who's been the most underwhelming. But like, when we're talking about like future stars, like guys that we can look in the future and say this guy is going to be like big in the league eventually, like at least almost all the guys that you talk about have some sort of defining marker and they work on the other areas of their game. You know, he's a defensive specialist. He can shoot the three really well. He's a shot blocker. You know, he has nothing. Like he really it in the like I can't give him a definitive marker and say he needs to work on these areas of his game and he's really good at this. He's a bad finisher. He's a bad shooter. He's average, maybe slightly above average defensively. He's, you know, average like court vision. Like, I really don't see anything that makes this guy special. And I really do want him to be that guy because I think the Knicks could use him. But he was a guy for this Knicks team to be like a contender or even like in the playoff picture. He was the guy who needed to step up the most of anyone. And he's fallen flat on his face.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think that, you know, he's just a very just disappointing in every aspect. I'll give him credit where credit's due. I think, you know, we make it sound like he's a scrub. Like, he's averaging, I think, like 18 points. Like, so he's getting some buckets just at a very, very inefficient rate and not contributing to the offense in the ways that they would like the Knicks need him to. I do think, though, like, you got to give him a little more credit defensively, especially because Jalen Brunson is a cone on that end of the floor. Like, he barely plays defense.
Yeah, Julius Randle too.
RJ Barrett has to take the hardest defensive guard assignment like every night.
That's true.
So you have to give him some credit there. He puts a lot of effort in that side of the court. Moving on though to the other picks. I think Kawhi disappointing because we just haven't seen him on the court at all. He's actually coming back tonight against the Magic, but still really disappointing that like we have not gotten a full healthy season from Kawhi. James Wiseman, just very, very disappointing as well. Like, this was a guy, you know, high pick. Obviously, was out all of last year. We expected him to come in and make an immediate impact, but he's been a little slow to get into it. I haven't given up on Wiseman yet. I still think he has potential to be a very good player, but we just haven't seen any of that as of yet. Moving on.
Yeah, oh,
Okay, you want
okay,
to go?
go ahead. No, I was just gonna say James Wiseman, like we've talked about this Warriors young core, and that just takes time to adapt, especially with such a complicated system that the Warriors have. But I mean, the part of the hard thing with having like an old core that's won championships and a young core is trying to make the two blend. And I think that's especially hard for the young guys.
Yeah, no, I was just
But I
gonna
mean,
say like
I think go ahead.
for Steve Kerr, you know, like the way he likes to run his system is that he makes the young guys sort of work their way slowly into the rotation. Think about it. Jordan Poole really, really had to work his way into the rotation, to where like now he's a piece now, but it only took like several years to do so, right? And it's the same with guys like Moses Moody and historically with other players in the past. So I expect James Wiseman to slowly, if he plays up to it, get more and more minutes and get more comfortable in the Warriors system. So haven't given up on him, but he has been disappointing. Zach LaVine, Nikola Vucevic, we did talk about. I was wondering if you had thoughts on Scottie Barnes in his season this year.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Raptors have been playing great as a whole. Like, as an organization, the Raptors have been really good, winning games. I mean, their record isn't reflective of the team that they are. I think that they've been missing some guys, but they're still the seventh seed. I mean, they're above 500. They're like, you know, playing the type of basketball you expect them to play, a lot of wings. But Scottie Barnes, I mean, he's been having like the same season I feel like he had last year kind of deal. You know, I don't think there's like a big jump. I expected maybe a bit of a jump, but I mean, look, averaging 14, 7, and 5 is still pretty good. Like, I'm not going to say that he's been disappointing because, you know, guys aren't going to have big jumps every single year. And maybe Scottie Barnes is the kind of guy who's going to be consistent throughout his career. Maybe he came into the league already prepared to do his thing. And maybe he's going to have slight improvement, but maybe he won't be ever that guy who's going to be like a 28 and 10.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people are disappointed from him, not just purely because of the box score, in which case he just made some minor steps back, but I think it's mostly just due to his impact on the court. Like, Scottie Barnes was really like the Draymond Green of the Warriors, or sorry, of the Raptors last year. You know, he contributed to winning in every asset, and he was really everywhere on the court at all times for Toronto. But this year, you know, we haven't really seen the same impact. Yes, he's been out there. Yes, he's been getting his numbers, but it hasn't really translated that much in the same way that it did last year. So I'll
I
agree
want
with
to say
you.
part of that, though, I think has been this like idea of point guard Scottie Barnes. I think that's very much changed his role. Like his role in this team has changed a lot from last year. And I look at it similarly to how I looked at almost like Kyle Kuzma in his first few years as a Laker, in the sense that he was asked to do one thing in his first year. He was asked to score. He was asked to be the guy he like wants to be, right? Just let him do his thing. And the next year they're like, okay, well now LeBron's here, so we want you to, become a shooter now, like, become a 3-and-D guy. And then it became, okay, now we want you to be a defensive and rebounding specialist. And he just had to work on every single area of his game and very much just adapted to what people asked him to do. And I mean, he eventually got there, but it took a lot of time, and he didn't become like this engine or like the same guy he is now because of the amount that it was asked of him in different areas of his game that he wasn't necessarily supposed to do. And I'm not going to say that Scottie Barnes is there to that extent, but I do think to some extent, like this stupid point guard Scottie Barnes thing, like I do really just kind of look at that and I'm like, the NBA is getting big, but like don't push it, don't force it. I think that might be a little bit of it.
Yeah, I mean, I would tend to agree. I don't think Scottie Barnes, I mean, he can be a decent point forward, but I think, you know, you want the ball in coming up, not really in his hands.
Yeah,
But
like he had 7 turnovers in the loss to Brooklyn. I mean, he had 17 points. He had 9 rebounds, but he had 3 assists. That assist to turnover ratio is not that of a point guard, Scotty. You can't tell me you always been a point guard and then have more than 2 times the turnovers to assists.
yeah, no, it's definitely not what you want out of your starting point guard in that case. That assists the turnover ratio. But let's move on. Stop talking about the disappointments. Start talking about the players who have impressed us the most. I guess it's a good time now to talk about the award races so far. We're like a quarter to the season, and
Isn't that
so
crazy? Qu quarter of the season gone already.
already that's so crazy. Before you know it, we're gonna be at the end, being like, man, that went by so quick. But I just want to, I'll list off the betting favorites, and I want to get your thoughts on each one as I list them off, and you say if you agree, and if not, like, who do you think should be here instead? So MVP is Jason Tatum right now.
I mean, like, yes and no. I think Jason Tatum is a great argument for it, but I'd still put Giannis at my one for the
Really?
MVP.
That's okay. I gotta totally disagree with you there. I think that, you know, the Celtics have by far and away been the best team. Tatum has been playing out of his mind, you know, dropping 30-point games every single night, 50-point games here and there. And he's just been playing terrifically on both ends of the floor. And I think
Yeah, but you
Tatum.
gotta.
Yeah, go
Oh,
for it.
I was gonna say. The Bucks only have one more loss than the Celtics do. You have to look at what Giannis has been doing, especially without Chris Middleton. Keep in mind, he's missing his number two guy, and he's
Chris
almost.
Middleton has been back for a few games.
He just got back, what, 2 games ago? He was out for a long time. So you're missing your best guy. Giannis is putting up just as good, if not better, numbers than he has historically, putting up 32, 11, and 5. Those, just normal Giannis numbers. He's been insane defensively, and I mean he's playing on a Bucks team. Like if we're gonna like use the Jokic like argument, like part of like the reason he won the MVP last year is he was missing his next two best guys. He's missing Jamal Murray. He's missing Michael Porter Jr. This Bucks team hasn't been famished by any means, but they have been missing their number two, their killer, the guy who's supposed to finish off the games, and they've still been winning basketball. So I think that, to me, I think it's really close between those two guys. I'm not saying Jason Tatum's out of the conversation. I'm not saying that I don't think Jason Tatum should be the number one. But if I'm taking someone right now as my MVP, it is Giannis.
Okay, that's a fair pick. I mean, I'm not mad at that. I think you'd be like hard pressed to say, like, you know, a guy like Anthony Davis has it right now, but No, Giannis is a fair
No,
pick.
definitely not Anthony Davis. I mean, if he were to keep this up over the course of the entire season, we're having a real conversation that's
100%. That's
Anthony
my
Davis.
chance, but as of right now, not necessarily. What about rookie of the year being Paolo Banchero?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a tightly contested race between him and Benedict Mathurin. I think those are two guys. I mean, he's just been so nice. I mean, just coming into the league, so mature, 18 and a half points a game, 4 rebounds a game. That's just, he's been doing everything that the Pacers have been asking of him. And he's been coming off the bench too. I mean, don't forget, this is another guy. He's been asked to have a role in a team. He's not like getting there, like his whole life he's been that guy, right? Benedict Mathurin. Usually rookies have a very hard time with this, like being in a role, especially like the lottery rookies. And he's done a great job of integrating himself into his system, and I think the Pacers are building a really awesome culture, and they are actually winning a lot of games. I think they're the 5 seed right now,
Yeah,
which
they're
is,
actually, these are translating to wins.
yeah, no, sorry, they're the 6 seed right now. So it's not like we're just talking about, oh, Benedict Mathurin's been, really good, but they're the 15 seed. Then we have to look at the Magic. I really don't think rookie of the year, like winning, matters that much, but he has been on the winning team where, when you're talking about Benedict Mathurin. And when you're looking over at, oh my God.
Paolo Banchero.
Yeah, sorry, Paolo Banchero. I don't know why I lost the name for a second. But Paolo, he's been averaging 22, 5, and 4. He's been looking great. So it's tough for me, but I'm going to give the slight edge to Paolo right now.
I'll give the slight edge to Benedict Mathurin. I think that, winning does matter in some sense. And I think the fact he's doing it off the bench, the fact that he's been more available, like he's played more
That's
games
true.
than Paolo. Paolo's missed a lot of time due to injury. I think that matters a lot. So that I think he kind of surmised that very, very well. Let's keep going. Coach of the Year, Joe Mazzulla for the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now that's very fair. Just usually that's an award given to the best unexpected coach. And I think a lot of people had the Celtics in that spot where they're like, Ime Udoka was such a great coach. Now they're going to have to fall, at least in some respect. And they've definitely been the best team. And a lot of that is obviously due to the fact that this team is so incredible, the players themselves. But you got to give credit to the coach, because if they came in with a weak coach, they definitely would have fallen in the standings. But they've managed to come together, and I'll give it to Joe Mazzulla, because it's not going to go to a guy like Monty Williams, who's already established, and we know that he's been that guy.
Also, I want to say the Celtics, as of right now, have the most efficient offense in NBA history. So,
And defense too, I believe, or not
I
most
don't know.
efficient, not most efficient defense in NBA history, but I'm saying top defense in the NBA right now.
Oh yeah, no, they definitely do. But like, this is, obviously like an incredible achievement for a guy who's like a first-time head coach and the first time coaching the squad. So, I would give it to Joe Mazzulla as well.
Yeah.
He's
I also
been
want to give a lot of credit, by the way, on that like offensive side of the ball to Malcolm Brogdon, a guy I have been very high on, and who somebody else was like, oh, he's going to have very little impact on this
I never said
Celtics
very
team.
little impact. I just said he's not gonna be the like, he's not gonna be the game changer that you think. And I think like
I think so far he's been a pretty
he's
big
been a
game
nice
changer.
piece around the periphery, but I would credit Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. Jaylen Brown, by the way, playing at an all-star level and should rightly be an all-star this year.
Agreed.
So,
I think he was snubbed last year as well, though.
all right, well, we'll keep going. What about Defensive Player of the Year is Brook Lopez?
Ooh, I mean, I Brook Lopez is nice, and the Bucks have a good defense, but I honestly don't think I this is with bias. I think Anthony Davis has been the Defensive Player of the Year.
I don't know about that.
I think Anthony Davis has been playing elite defense. The Lakers as a whole aren't that great of a defense. I think that they are in the top half of the league right now, I think. But just from an individual perspective, I think Brook Lopez has, he's a shot blocker, and he's been doing a great job. And I think an interesting statistic is that the Bucks, like when opponents play the Bucks, they have the least amount of attempts in the paint of any team. So that means teams just aren't even getting shots up when they get into the paint, which is
Yeah, because
a
guess
large
who's that?
part
You
Brooke
know who's
Lopez and
averaging?
Giannis.
Yeah, you know who's averaging 3 blocks a game?
Brooke
Brook
Lopez.
Lopez on the second best defense in the league. I think this is a pretty good pick. It's either that or you got to pick one of the Celtics players, like Marcus Smart or something like that, because they have the number
Yeah.
one defense.
I do think what I'm saying though is I think Anthony Davis has, especially in these past few games, come to light as another guy who has to be in that conversation.
Sure.
Absolutely.
I just don't know if you can win Defensive Player of the Year on the number 10 defense in the league.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see where the league is going, but I mean, I do think Brook Lopez is deserving it. The more I talk to myself about it, the more I think Brook Lopez is deserving. I think that statistic about the points in the paint, like teams aren't even getting shots up, is pretty impressive. And you have such a good credit to Giannis on that.
Sure.
But
Yeah. So, okay. Well, another one we agree on. What about most improved player being Shai Gilgeous-Alexander?
absolutely. I mean, just the fact he's been so nice this year. I mean, OKC, who the hell cares if they're, gonna have a bad record? It's OKC. They're not trying to win games. But I mean, just what is he averaging right now? 32 points per game, something crazy. Yeah, 31 points per game, 6 assists, 5 rebounds, very efficient scorer as well. I mean, what more could he ask from the guy? He's probably bumped up his points per game by like eight points per game, and just become more efficient. So,
He
I
should
mean,
be an all-star
like we
team.
talked, yeah, he should absolutely be an all-star, and we talked about this before. But like, because of how well Shai's playing on offense, when the team plays OKC, they actually have to, like, no matter how good the team is, on any given night, OKC could win just because Shai could just catch fire, and all of a sudden, even if the team was up 10 to start the fourth quarter, now OKC is a 2-point game, and it's for real.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how Shai fits alongside Chet Holmgren next year when he comes back from his injury. Moving, I do agree with you there. I think that Shai has elevated his game more than anyone else in the league, and I don't even think this one's really close. Finally, sixth man of the year. Betting says Russell Westbrook's the favorite right now. You agree?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I've been watching all these Laker games, and I honestly don't see another, like, a close second in this race. I think Benedict Mathurin, maybe, like, a close contestant as well for this award, averaging 18, like, 4, like, 18, 3, and 4, somewhere around there. Maybe it was 3 and 1. But Russell Westbrook has truly just all of a sudden skyrocketed this Lakers team. Like, I do think he's been a big part of that. He's only averaging 8 assists per game right now, but in the past 2 games, he had 26 assists, with how many turnovers? Okay, 6 turnovers in this last game, but he had 0 turnovers against the Milwaukee Bucks in the game where he had 11 assists. So very impressive. And we've talked plenty about Russell Westbrook and our opinions on him, so I don't think we need to go much more into it. But do you think there's anybody else who's kind of contesting him?
I mean, Vegas says like Jordan Poole is kind of the consensus number two, and then Malcolm Brogdon, Benedict Mathurin at 3 and 4. But I don't really think they're in the same tier as Russ, because like,
What Jordan Poole's been starting,
no, I mean he's sixth man of the year. I mean, in
but
those,
how is that possible when Jordan Poole has been starting games?
because you just have to start like less than half, I think, is the qualification or something.
Okay, but I believe
More
as
than
of right
that.
now he's been starting like that many games. Obviously, the Vegas odds know better than I do, but
Yeah.
I feel like he's been starting a lot of these games.
I
Regardless,
don't
I
question
wouldn't
that.
give it to Jordan Poole over Russell Westbrook anyway.
I wouldn't give it to him either.
One thing to just end the pod real quick, I did want to ask you a question about Russell Westbrook.
Sure.
Because he's been playing so great, I mean, look, this guy, we have to be realistic, he's on like a $52 million contract, or maybe it was 47, whatever it is. We know he's not worth that. But as the Lakers organization, are you going to re-sign Russell Westbrook on a 2 to 3 year deal? We're talking 10 to 15, maybe $20 million a year. Would you be willing to re-sign him in that range if this is the level of play that can the Lakers can
I
continue to have?
say wait and see. You got to see how it pans out in the playoffs. That's always been the question with Russell Westbrook. Can he keep up that this type of play, this play in the playoffs? And
Yeah, but the thing is, if you don't extend him, then if he does play well in the playoffs, and not to say the Lakers are like, going to win the championship or even make a far playoff run, but if he is not the leading cause or a big factor in the reason why they didn't win a series, he might go get $20 million somewhere else, and then you lose an entire big chunk of your team, and that's just a void that you can't really replace very easily.
Well, I think you just, again, you have to wait and see. Russell Westbrook, for the entirety of last year, looked horrible, and to start the year, didn't look great. Now that he's had a couple of weeks where he's looked good, I don't think you should jump into already talking about re-signing him. This is a guy who we saw said at points had the worst contract in the NBA. Obviously, he's not worth $50 million, and obviously, you're not saying to sign him for that amount of money. But like, you have to be patient with this. You can't rush these things, because who knows how the season will develop. Will the Lakers continue to play this hot? Will things start to fall apart? Will Russ go back to the way he was playing? You just got to be patient, wait and see. But I wouldn't be opposed to it if this was the type of play we were getting from him.
Yeah, absolutely. All right,
And
I think that is a good place to call it.
definitely a good episode. I think we should be able to get another episode out next week. But in that case, if not, then in a couple weeks' time. But thank you all so much for listening, and we shall see you on the next episode. Take care. Bye-bye.
Peace.